DNA. Eat the foot up, man. Oh, the whole foot.
Good night.
That's my pleasure. What's yours?
Yo.
What's yours? You a nipple guy? No. DNA. DNA. You look like an areola guy. You guys like them big old areolas on there? DNA, come on. We're holding a conversation. All right?
Yeah, I'm chill. Passing your seat.
Come along, step inside, as we take you on a ride, as we do it all with pride, on a starship enterprise.
Got the music up and bumping, when we always up to something. Oh, 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 yeah, we up to something, yeah, we up to something.
And I'm doing this, I ain't even high. I used to get high, I don't get high no more, so I'm crazy like that.
And with what that, we DNA? Welcome you to episode 54 of the Swerve City Podcast.
Man, Michael Cool.
DNA, you got DNA, you like earlobe?
You nah, earlobe? Nah, man, I'm playing. I'm impressed. What extracurricular
activity? Listen, this is how we start. This is how we start our podcast, man. With randomness, we are here live in studio Orlando, Florida, live in location. We thank you guys for tuning in. I am the host of this wonderful show, number 54 here, Montez T.Z. Scott, my brother, as you know, Swerve is out, you know, overseas, all over the world, doing his thing. We welcome my brother back as soon as he's able to come back, because that man is paying the bills here. And thank us for using all the equipment in the room, brother. You know we love you. And we'll see you as soon as you come back. You know, Swerve City Podcast, how we do. Now, before I get into our wonderful guests here, I want to get into our introductions and our advertisements. Swerve City, as of March, dropped our album Tears on all markets, all digital platforms. If you guys have not gotten it, please check it out. Dope album. Mickey Fax is on there. Hopefully our next project, we get the man to my left on there too. And sure. You know, we have a lot of great content on there. Check out our record Tears, that's doing really good on all digital platforms. Check it out, man. Great group album. Swerve's working on his solo project. I'm working on my solo project, Erica's Son too. And we have a lot of things coming. We're going to put out kind of like a Loved Below speaker box type package where both of us drop our solos together. So stay tuned with that as we stay moving and stay grooving with that. We're going to keep you guys all updated on that news. Next, the AEW project. Also, I'm going to have some news for my brother to the left here. Also, I'm going to be hitting him up soon about the Who We Are project. If you guys know, I produced, co-produced three projects on that album. The record for Jay Cargill, the record for Mark Henry, and the record for Nyla Rose. So if you guys are stay tuned to what we have going on, there's a lot going on. Check that project out. It's doing very well for Black History Month. It's still making a lot of noise out there. You can still get your commemorative discs right now, and it's all streaming on digital platforms right now as well. So make sure you guys show love and support on that. Now, you know, not only do we have a NBA legend in the building, but we also have a rap legend in the building. And, you know, these two guys I definitely want to bring together, because this is all about not only the art of competition, of sports, of being the best at what you do, but it's also about coming together and show people about our dynamics and what we do. Whether it's in competitive sports, podcasting, things of that world, we all come together to make the best collective, to show you guys how we bring it together. I brought together two of the best in the world of what they do, two legends. To my left, I'm going to start with him first. This is one of the best rappers in the world, freestyle, battling. You get smoked if you step in front of him. Number three, top view in the world?
Yeah.
See, I did my homework. Top three, I watch every week. Top three most viewed battle rapper in the world, a legend, my brother, DNA. How you feeling, bro?
I'm feeling great, man. Good looking for having me. Good looking for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
If the battle still would drop on YouTube, I would be number one again. But you know, they're not. I may not drop to three, but yeah,
absolutely. So
appreciate you having me.
So it's Oz, Clips, and you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's Clips, Oz, and me.
Clips is number one.
Yeah. He snuck in on the YouTube battle.
It's them wilding out checks.
Yeah, that chest of him battle. Chris Brown's house when that dropped. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I got you. Last but not least, this man here who is the guest of the show. This man is a NBA legend, NBA champion. He guarded whoever was the best man on the other side of the court. He's part of the most legendary dynasty in NBA history. This man is, you know, not only a coach, not only a philanthropist, but this man is hilarious As you see, this man is hilarious. He's got me rolling over here. Was not expecting it, but he is a legend. The GOAT himself, Michael Cooper. What is up, man?
My name is Coop. My man hang out is up around the hoop. We play hard. We play smart. We never let drugs tear us apart. There we go. Yeah, you got balls.
Hey, get money, drink water.
DNA, excuse me, brother. I pay homage to you. That was just something that was made up about 25 years ago. We did a rap album back then. So
that's fine. Like I said.
The thing about it is I still remember it. But glad to be here, TZ, DNA. Glad to be here.
Thank you, man. You know, we, me and DNA, just to give you guys a little history, me and DNA, we recently connected. And I was supposed to go to the event Friday. I couldn't do the personal reasons. But I was like, hey, man, you still in Orlando? You still here? You still in Florida? He's like, yeah, I'm going to be here. So we worked everything out. I said, man, just come on the show. I'm coming up there today, which ended up being today. Come on the show and hop on the podcast. And here he is right now. He pulled up. You know what I'm saying? If you give a pan out to the team, his homies with him, go ahead and give you guys a quick shout out who you guys are.
Major Ride Out.
Major Dropout. Get money, drink water.
Amen. So he pulled up. And, I was like, you know what, man? We interviewing Coop, man. Michael Cooper. There's so much we can start this. Obviously, you know, he obviously like if you like nipples or not, but you know, with this
he's still waiting. He's still ain't got an answer out of it. I'm waiting to hear something.
So you a footman?
Yes. Yes. Okay. My wife has beautiful feet. But you know what? Let me ask DNA this, okay? So we don't get too far on the other side.
Right.
Yeah, who's your NBA team?
My NBA team, I'm from New York, the Knicks.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about them because we kick their ass all the time. But we don't worry about them, it's still. Come on, man. Find that thing out. Yeah, we still got love for him.
I'm a Spurs fan.
Whip their ass, too.
Yeah, y'all did. Yeah. Especially at that time.
That was back then, but everybody's getting their revenge on us now. Yeah. But we'll be back. LeBron going to bring us back next year.
Okay, so here's my one question I got to break the ice with, man. What happened to the Lakers last year, man? What happened?
Well, you know what? I think when assembling the team, a lot of teams like to go with the big four or the big three, and they want those legendary players together, and sometimes that doesn't work. I, for one, thought for sure that this was going to work. Westbrook, AD, and LeBron, I think, and you surround them with the good kind of group that they had, I thought that those guys would be able to pull it together, and the bottom fell out of it, I think. And the main reason was Anthony Davis going down. That put Westbrook in a whole nother light because he was brought there to be like that third, maybe fourth scorer. When AD goes down, now he's pushed back to the light to where he has to score a lot. And again, LeBron is the man of the team. He's the one with the ball all the time. So again, you had a lot of dynamics going on that didn't fit well, and the chemistry never came together. And Coach Vogel just, again, not blaming him, but obviously his head had to roll, couldn't bring things together to where they could be playing good basketball. I mean, we were playing good ball until AD got hurt, but when the bottom fell out, it just got ugly.
Mm. Do you feel that with the roster, so let's say for the other side of it, of getting Westbrook, a guy who's not really a perimeter shooter, Hall of Famer, but not necessarily a perimeter shooter, how would he fit with LeBron being a ball-dominant player, Westbrook being a ball-dominant player? Did you not? A lot of people feel like it wouldn't work, but you said you was a fan of it. You thought it would work.
I thought it was going to work early because I thought, again, Westbrook has gotten all the individual accolades. He's done some magnificent things in his career, and now you get to come back home where he's from, California. You get to play with an organization that thinks about winning championships, and I thought he would buy in. But again, that goes back to the coach. I don't think Coach Vogel was ever to sell him on that. And obviously with AD being hurt, that was a big part of it. It really never came to fruition. So again, then LeBron started missing some games, so it just like really got ugly. But they never got a chance to buy in. But you know what? Coach Ham, I think, is a great pickup. That's the Lakers hired as head coach. I think he'll be able to do that.
For me, I feel like it might be an unpopular opinion, but I just and it goes with ego. I don't know if Westbrook should have started. You know what I mean? Because I feel, in my opinion, right, and I don't know the dynamics with the team on, like I said, who feels what way or what, but I feel like him being the second unit would have been that, you know what I mean? Because like Coop said, LeBron is already a ball handler, so it slows down what Westbrook is trying to do when now he just has to, you know what I mean, catch the ball off screens when really I feel like his style is all to create. You know what I mean? When you see him on the Thunder, when Kevin Durant left and he was putting up all them triple doubles is because he was mainly controlling the ball the whole time, and then he could dish or do whatever he wants to do. With LeBron, now he's waiting on his move. But if you bring him off the bench with Melo, then it's like you got two different units. You got LeBron running it when he's going, and then Westbrook would have came off the bench and been able to do the same thing he was doing before.
And you know what? I think that was probably my thoughts on that, too, because he would have fit well with that second group because you let him have the ball and he can just run and actually be their main scorer out there at DNA. But I think, again, that's something that the coach has to establish early in training camp. And, again, Coach Vogel, I don't think ever got that going. But, again, the main thing, I think, is AD's health. If he stayed healthy, then things could have probably worked out. But that's a great assessment because I believe that that's what should have happened. But, again, you have to have a coach strong enough and the balls to do that and sit Westbrook down and tell him, hey, this is how we think this you best serve the team.
So this brings back to another question. I want to ask both of you guys this. Start with you, Coop. You see the way the NBA is going right now. You see Steph Curry, not necessarily a ball-dominant guy, when he's won a championship, has a great team around him. But you see the LeBrons, the Westbrook, the Lucas, they're more ball-dominant. Do you feel like that? I know, but rest in peace, Kobe. I know he had his opinion on this, like the James Hardens. Do you feel like ball-dominant guys can win championships? Or do you think that they need to be more of a facilitator? Like, do a little bit of both. You see the ball-dominant guys, once you kind of clamp on them, it's kind of like they're going home after that. Like,
I think they do. I think you can do both. I think you can have a ball-dominant guy. When the Lakers won a championship in the bubble, LeBron had the ball in his hand 85-90% of the time. But I think the key to that is you have to have teammates that are willing to be accepting of that. And if they're accepting of that, then they're going to move and do what they got to do to get open. I think, again, Steph Curry was fantastic this year. I mean, I'm really impressed with that young man. About 5 years ago, I was saying, you know what? This kid is not that great of a shooter, you know, and you think about what you would have done to play again. Steph Curry is the greatest shooter that's ever played this game. And I'm talking about George Gervin, his coach, Steve Kerr, just to name a few people. But great players understand, and when he's a scorer, unlike Magic, Magic was not necessarily a scorer, but Magic could put people in position to score points. Curry has to be a ball dominant player because Klay Thompson was struggling with his shot and Draymond Green wasn't hitting anything. So then he became a big part of the offense on trying to score. But you see in what was it, the fifth and sixth game of that series where he wasn't doing anything, then he went and became that facilitator on getting his other players off. So I think you have to find a happy medium with a ball dominant guy, whether he's going to be just a scorer or he's going to be a facilitator.
What do you enjoy watching more as a fan? Like, do you enjoy watching more of the Magics, the passing, the Steve Nashes, or do you like the ball dominant guys yourself?
I mean, it really depends. Yeah, I really watch basketball, so you know what I mean. Like, if you're watching it from a strategic standpoint, like the Spurs in the later years when they had Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, you know what I mean, you're watching them technically win the game. They're slowing it up, half court offense. You know what I mean, everything is just how they're moving. And then, you know, I feel like the Warriors this year, they took a page out of Michael Cooper and Magic Johnson and the Showtime Lakers with that whole offense, except, you know, y'all were more so with the alley-oops and the dunks. There is just running and gunning to get the three. So in terms of excitement, like when you ask that question as a fan, I think the running and gunning is more exciting. But if you're a student of the game and you're like watching it from an aspect of IQ and how it's moving, then you could appreciate both.
Now, let me ask you a question, DNA. And again, you mentioned two good, obviously the Lakers, Showtime and Kerr. What about the Bulls 90s when they were winning? Because Jordan really had that ball in his hand quite a bit until Scottie Pippen started evolving. And you know what? I wasn't a big fan when I played against Jordan, but when I retired, I love seeing that tongue hang and him going through the hoop. So you don't get moves like that when he's passing the ball off.
Yeah, you're right. Like I said, me watching it, I enjoy all of it. But yeah, as a kid, because I was born in 91, so I started watching basketball at like 5 or 6, and seeing Jordan do those moves, you know, you think that's the only way basketball is played. So then when I go back, then I'm watching how you guys played, and then as I'm getting older, then I'm watching the Spurs and everybody else. Then I just learned to really appreciate it. But yeah, as a kid growing up, yeah, I'm going with watching Michael Jordan from the free throw line, because you're looking like, oh my God, how's this guy doing?
Telling you, you think everybody plays like that.
Yeah,
you
know exactly. What I mean? Yeah, exactly.
And then you're like, nah, not everybody's that athletic and gifted. Exactly. Or, no, you're not Mike, bro. But, you know, it's crazy because I look at it and I say, okay, you're the best defender on the team. Showtime Lakers, 80s, crowd is not an empty seat in the house. Your job is to guard the man. How is that going into every single game? You got Sidney Moncrief. You got Larry Bird. We'll get into your rivalry with Larry later. But just a lot of the stuff that you had to prepare for yourself. You know, Magic's is going to take the ball. He's going to fling it. He's going to run. He's going to fling it. Kareem, if he can make it down court, he can get his hook shot. Your goal, your job is to say, okay, I'm going to be unselfish. My job is to do defense. James Worthy's going to get his 15 shots or whatever. I'm going to play defense. How was that going into every single game?
You know, well, it was easy for me to do because when I got with the Lakers, it wasn't about scoring. Because when I first came to the Lakers, they had Jamal, Norm Nixon, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So they said for me to make the team, Coop, we need a defensive player. So my role was already established there. But as we go through this and people start evolving, Worthy comes into the game. We got Bob McAdoo. But my nightmare of a playing, and again, going against some of the best, was in 88. Against the Detroit Pistons and
Isaiah?
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas. And bring me grief. This man twisted his ankle and scored 27 and a quarter on us.
I watched
now,
that
it wasn't all on me.
Yeah.
Now, so don't it wasn't all on me. I probably caught about 20 of it, but the other seven was Byron Scott. But to answer your question, that is something that you really have to like get in the mindset. Just like Curry has to be in the mindset to score, you have to be in that mindset because you know the team is running plays for the players, person. They're setting picks for him. Well, they didn't set many for Isaiah. Isaiah just went off on us, and that's something that I really hate to this day. And every time I see him, I almost want to kick his ass, but we're friends now. But it's just one of those moments. Sometimes you win some, and you know you have a good night against them, and you can make them. I don't think you can ever stop any player. Any player in the NBA can get a shot off, but you make them take shots they don't want to take. But that night, Isaiah, that's my nightmare. When I think about some of the players, that's the one I have a hard time with because I did everything I could to stop him, to make him take difficult shots, and he still scored, and he scored while he was injured.
Now, transition that to what you do for a career. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to battle rap. You know, you have to play defense while playing offense. And even though I make music, that's a whole different type of thing. You have to play defense and offense. You kind of got to know what the person's saying. You got to be sharp enough to rebuttal it, if that's what you do, which you're the greatest at. And tell me a little bit about that. And also tell me a little bit about who was your nemesis as well as he named his. Like, who was your nemesis? Where it might have got a little bit of personal. And it's just, you know what? I have to do this. And, you know, I have to not only take him out, but it's more of a competition sense, kind of like he said with IT.
For me, like, so you watch it a lot, but for the people that's watching this that don't, and for Michael Cooper, just to understand, in battle rap, it's really hard to play defense because when you go, that's your offense. And then when the other person's going, you can't really do anything. You can't put your hands up. You're being a bad sport if you talk. So it's really like, it's really very minimal defense. Like, yeah. For me, because my IQ is smart, like, I may sprinkle in something that I think they're going to say so it'll throw them off. Or, you know what I mean? My moves or gestures or when you look unbothered or certain things you do. Like, it's a mind game. So it's a game of the mind. So if I'm going in a battle and I know, all right, such and such is going to talk about this when this happened, I may say it first and then mind manipulate the crowd so when he says it, it deflates. It doesn't hit like that because I already threw it out.
So you know what? That kind of goes with Bob McAdoo. This guy was a scorer. So your offense sometimes has to be your defense.
Yeah, in a sense. Basically, in battle rap, your offense has to be your defense. And like the only time you get to play defense is like he said, is a rebuttal. So it's three rounds. So let's say I go first, and then the person I'm battling goes after. If they say something that rocks the crowd, now my next round, I'll take what they said and then flip it back on them, which is called the rebuttal, and then that'll be defense because I'm basically answering them.
Do you ever take anything personal or anybody has taken anything personal to where it went beyond that?
For me, no. My competitiveness is personal. So okay. The moment I step on it, like, I try not to battle anybody that I'm friends with because I'm the one person that I'm going to take it serious. I'm not coming there, you know what I mean, to lose, to go home. Like, we can, and I can keep it clean. Like, I won't, you know, dig into people because it's crazy. Certain people will bring up, you know what I mean, who this person slept with and this girl's a hoe and you got robbed on this time. So it gets very deep. But me, is
what kind of titties you like?
You know what I mean? I feel like in that sense, I would compare myself to like Jordan. Like, you know what I mean? Even if I don't have reasons to be upset, I'll make them up because I just know that's the mind state that I have to get in. Like, you know, watching it, I feel like to be a successful, great battle rapper, you have to be in a dark place because agreed. The stuff you have to say, it has to sting, it has to hurt.
And that's what I was going to say. Do you ever, is off limits, is your mother or grandmother or somebody ill in your family, is that off limits?
So like me, uh-huh. like it's like, that's the... Teezy could tell you, like, to me, I feel like that's the main problem in hip hop. You see, like, in basketball, you touch somebody too hard, it's a foul. If you push them even harder, then it's a technical. It's like levels in rap. What one person takes as disrespect is another. So me, I just live by a moral compass. Anything I wouldn't do outside of the battle ring, I wouldn't. So I don't mention kids, I don't mention dead people because I feel like they can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't do that no matter how. You know what I mean? Because I want to go to sleep at night. I believe in, you know what I mean, a power above. So that's not what I. But certain people, they.
That's like what I was going to say. Fly. Some people cross the line.
Yeah, certain people, it goes beyond where I'm just standing there. Like, I don't know how you're, how are you sitting there allowing them to say that? Like, certain things is just insane.
Yeah.
But it's a real, like, the way, and I know you coach too, so it's a real, very good battle rapper, you have to study. Like, it's like homework. So you have to study your opponent. Then you have to study the crowd. Then you have to study where you're battling at. Because all those intangibles will change the dynamic of a battle. It's like, you know what I mean? If you're battling with a southern crowd, you don't want to be too wordy because that's not what they really into. They're more related to the street references or things that's easy to catch. If you battle in New York, you know what I mean? You know you got to be in a hostile environment. Just the easy things that may go over in another city because they're excited to see you is somebody that raps on every New York corner. So now you got to make sure your wordsmith game is higher above. So it's a whole. It's like a whole world of, you know what I mean, just studying and really perfecting what you're trying to do.
Who was your toughest matchup, if you would say?
I had a few. So I had a battle with a guy named Disaster. This is very early on in my career.
The first one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was from Cali, and we wound up battling in Canada, and he was like one of the biggest stars in Canada because he was already over there. And Drake wound up hosting a battle unexpectedly. So me and him had a big grudge match on the internet. We're going back and forth. It's a highly anticipated battle. And he could do everything I could do. So, like, you know, you come from the era where people, they didn't write their rhymes. Like, I know they really freestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm able to do that, and he is. But a lot of times now, people that battle, they get a lot of preparation. So when you get two people that can really just go off what's going on in the room and go in there, that becomes a whole different type of match. So he was one of the people that could do that. So it's like, if I lack in one area, I know, and most of the times when I battle other people, I have that advantage. So in this particular battle with him, we kind of mirrored each other. So it was like a struggle for me to find out what could I do to, you know what I mean, put myself over the top.
You know, DNA, that brings up a good point because I know when we played, and one of the arenas that I used to love to play in was old Boston Garden. It had dead spots all over the floor. I used to love to play in the Spectrum. Grover Washington playing those arenas. Now they got these bright new arenas and there's no dead spots anywhere. Are there some nice cities? And like you said, sometimes you have to understand the crowd that when you're battling somebody. I mean, are there cities that you would rather battle in as opposed to others?
Yeah, of course, of course. Philly, it's no.
You don't like Philly? Why is that? No.
Because Philly, like, so when you understand that Philly is like a city of where, you know what I mean? There are not that many battle events thrown there, so when they're thrown there, it's all Philly. You know what I mean?
Oh, so there is no brotherly love in Philly then?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. Like, I went there, and anybody that's from Philly or the surrounding cities, like, you're going to have to work extremely hard to win them over. And you know what I mean? The slightest line that maybe, you're out of here. They're booing you.
Oh, okay.
So that happens too. Yeah. Like the same way they boo the rival teams in battle rap, if you're not doing your thing, they're booing you. They're getting you out of there. People done ran off stage because they couldn't take it. So it gets hectic.
What's the best place you like to?
One of the best places I like is Houston, New York, because that's just where I'm from. And New York is like, if you could, people always say, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And London. London's crowd is surprisingly amazing. I mean, like, they really, really gravitate to hip hop. Like, they're like New York or, you know what I mean, LA, one of the popular cities of rap in the 90s. Like, that's like London. Like, it's pure. They just want to hear people rap and at a high level. Like, you get to reach a highest level.
And they respect what you do in those cities, because that's like, even though, you know, Boston was a dreaded place for us to play, they still respected basketball, like in New York. New York may not like you, but you know what? They respect a good game when they see it. So I understand exactly what you're talking about.
So speaking of Philly, I hate to do this, Coop, but you know I had to bring this up. The dunk, the Julius Irvin dunk, man.
Why are you laughing, DNA? why are you laughing? You remember that?
No, I don't. I seen it later. I didn't see it, but it happened.
It's okay if we show?
You know what? I'm going to say this. I'm going to say two things about the dunk.
Okay, bring up a picture.
And what I say about the dunk, you know what? You play this game of basketball, you rap, battle with people and stuff like that. And if you're going to battle with somebody, you want to get defeated by the best, right? You don't want no scrub coming out of the, you know.
You can sleep at night.
So if I'm going to get dunked on, I'd rather for it to be by Dr. J than that last guy on the bench coming in and catching me off balance. But, you know, that was one that I my kids to this day are like.
Yeah, man.
You know what? Stop laughing, DNA. Listen, Doc was out. Had I been able to get up in the air, and if I could have gotten up in the air just a step before him, that would have been the greatest block of all time.
I'm saying, he wasn't, you know, that far. Yeah, he just got a step ahead.
If I could have got up and got turned, ahead. If I could have got turned, and because see, if I had blocked that, I had to put my left hand up, and he would have broke my arm, and it would have just been a really bad dunk. I mean, a play for me. But if I could have got up in the air and got turned and caught that with my right hand, you'd be saying something totally different. But you know what? They can't show this DNA on TV or anywhere unless they get cleared with me. And I get paid.
That's power. Fire. That's power right there, bro.
I've never seen it at that angle. I've always seen it up when I'm up higher, but yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, I'm gonna ask you as far as your career.
Fuck Doc up now. If I saw we were doing that. I would have to play dirty and hit, knock him off his feet or something like that.
I think he still does that thing. He still tries to dunk each every year at his age. Every year increase, he tries to dunk the basketball.
I don't know about that. Doc better stop that. Okay. He ain't up that high. This is the first time I've ever seen this shot. I've never seen that. That's amazing.
Wow. So you just.
Maybe I should have. You know what? I almost quit. Way back up here. I should have quit when I was back there and just went on ahead and let him dunk.
But let me ask you this, though. So you're, and during that time, you're damn near in the finals every year.
Well, we were blessed. You know, we went to the finals. In my 12-year career, we went 9 times and we won it 5 times.
Like, So you're that's constantly crazy. There. Like, you're constantly, the amount of winning, and what does it take to win that much or to be at that point and to stay motivated? To go each and every, at some point people get fed and they're good. They feel content.
Because you know what? A lot of that had to do, and you know, people talk about Magic Johnson. I can't say Magic Johnson without saying Larry Bird, because again, those two were synonymous of changing the NBA. But Magic was a winner. And that guy, our first championship, we were just playing. We did not once talk about winning a championship in 1980. After we won it then, it was about every year, let's go. This is what we got to do to win. You guys got to get ready in summer. You don't take long vacations. Let's come back ready. We don't use training camp to get in shape. You use training camp to get our game together. So a lot of that had to do a lot with him. And once it became like the core thing for us, that's what we were about. And that's how we stayed with it.
Michael, I got a question for you. Out of all 5 championships you won, which one felt the best?
2 of them, DNA. The first one was good because we didn't know what we were doing, and we just won a championship, and we ended up winning. But the one that I'm from Los Angeles, California, born and raised in Pasadena. The one that was special to me was 1985, because it was kind of like revenge for Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain, all the Laker teams that had went against Boston and could never win. We kind of like were able to erase those ghosts in 85 when we finally beat them, because remember in 84, we fell to them too, so we kind of like had that burden on our shoulders. But to win it in 85, that was probably a special one for us.
How'd that feel though? Like, I imagine you winning, everything's great, but to lose to your nemesis, like, I know that's just that feeling
of you wanting to come back and be like, I can't believe Larry Bird beat me.
Well, that's what it was. I mean, you know, Magic and he always had that rivalry going back to college when it was Indiana State, Michigan State, and Magic had won. So they had already had their head-to-head match going before they got in the pros. So when we come in and we lose in 84, and again, Larry was going to be the guy that I was going to be tagged to guard and that's eventually be imaged with him for the rest of our careers.
Right.
It was hard in a sense, but we knew that they were the better team that year. That's why we came up short. So we had to get our game together, and I had to refocus myself as far as what he did to have the better outcome on me that year. We changed that the next year.
Now, you know, the one thing I got to ask, you're guarding this man 10 years for when Larry came in the league. If you can, what was the trash talk between y'all two? Please.
You know what?
Give me something.
He only talked one time to me because he knew that that wasn't going to affect me, and I knew it wasn't going to affect him. Okay. So after a while, we stopped talking. But he talked to me in 1984. It was like the second game of the series. And he came down the court, and I was like on him in his face. And he said, I'm getting ready to wear your ass out. So I'm like, okay, I got in my best defensive stance. I got down low, and he's coming off and say, this is the basket here, and he's coming off up here. Robert Parris came down and set a screen. So I'm like, okay, I got this fucker. I'm going around. So he goes around it. He goes up. He catches the ball at the elbow. He goes up, and Kareem switches out on him too. And he goes up to shoot the ball, and I'm like, I got this shit. I got it. And I don't know how this man got that pass to Parris, because Kareem was right there in front of him. I'm on the side of him, and he got the ball to Parris. Parris dunked it. He said, I told your motherfucking ass I was going to get you. And that was the last thing he ever said to me. And we never talked after that. We just respected each other, and we just played because we knew it wasn't going to bother, you know, anything that he said. So he was very competitive dude, man. Very competitive.
My question is like, because also the way it was set up for something to be talked about now, because before y'all got to 1984, it's like the Lakers would go to the finals, then the Celtics would go to the finals, and every time it was about to be the Lakers and the Celtics, somebody would fall short. So everybody's on the edge of their seat when it happens. And then y'all wind up getting them 2 out of 3 times. But my main question is going back to that 1980 season, that first season, what was it like being on the team when – the coaches switched after 13 games?
You know what? A lot of people blame Magic for that, and it wasn't about that. It was about Coach Westhead had gotten us. We won a championship, and the next season he came back and he tried to change everything. And Matt, we're like, why are we changing stuff? So he wanted to be a little bit more in control. So when Pat Riley stepped in and they made the coaching change, Riley was perfect for us. You know, he had the slick back hair and the Michael Douglas look, and he played the whole role. Yeah. And you know what he did? He got out of our way and let us play. Yeah, we had some things that we had to do. You know, there was kind of a formula we had to work with. But in essence, he let us do our thing, and he let Magic do his thing. So it was really, really comfortable when he took over until we just ran our gauntlet, and then everything started. People started getting old, and we had to make the change. But basketball was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was... People always ask me, what was it like playing with the Lakers? It was like, you know, if you have, I'm from a big family, and I have like 5, 6 cousins, and we used to go from block to block playing basketball in the summertime. And I didn't have to guess what my cousin was going to do. He'd make a move, and I just knew he was going to make it, and that's what it was like playing with Magic, because we knew each other so well.
Wow. So that whole dynasty, you have that whole time with you guys having that run. And in the middle of that run, there's this kid from North Carolina that comes in. And he's supposedly the next one in the league, Michael Jordan. At this time, as a competitor, how do you feel? Especially because I know before you see, you know how the NBA works. You guys get everything before we get it. Yep. As fans. You start hearing about him, like, man, he all right. You know what I mean? Oh, you know, that's how it be as competitors. So he comes into the league and then he starts scoring or being... See, that's what talking about him does, I guess. You end up, grace of God, we all right, man. We're saying nothing bad about you, Mike. It's okay.
Not yet. But go ahead.
So how was that, seeing this guy come to the league? You guys are having your run. Bird's still in his prime. Then you hear about Jordan. Did Jordan this, Jordan that. How was you feeling at that time?
You know what? Jordan, people ask me who's the hardest player I've ever had to guard, and I say Bird because you had to guard him all the time, even when he didn't have the ball. The people that were easy to guard was Jordan, Gervin, Andrew Toney, guys like that, because when they passed the ball, they kind of like stood. Larry was going to rebound or he was going to do something. Ah. So that's why I say he was the best. But Michael, And I like to pat myself on the back with this. So Jordan didn't win shit until I left the league. So in 91. Now, I tell Michael that to his face right now because, again, Jordan had – we had our battles, and he won some, and I won some. But the year that I retired, which was in 1990, when I left is when they started – made their run, and that was the first game. And I remember coming back because I went over to, in Italy to play, and I came back for, like, the fourth or fifth game they played at the Forum. And I actually saw Michael as he was going through. He said, "Coop, I'm glad you're not here." And then Magic was telling me in the locker room, he said, "Coop, we wish we had you." But you know what? I wish I would have been in that too, but the way things worked out. But you know what? Jordan became a beast as he got older, man. That guy, you know, when you lose your athleticism and you don't run as fast and jump as high, you got to change your game a little bit. And Michael started mastering that low post turnaround jumper, the mid-range game, which he always had. But he really, really got good at it. And that's why they were able to beat Utah Jazz, because what was the game-winning shot was a free throw line jumper. Okay, went to the basket for a dunk. That was his shot. So Jordan was a hell of a player. Really, really good player. And you know what? Well, he was so good that the Detroit – you guys may call them the bad boys, but I call them bad kids, because after we whooped their ass in 87 and 88, they became kids to us, Rick Mahorn and all of them. And I tell them that. But them guys are so good that they had to make up a rule, and they came up with Jordan rules. And what was Jordan rules? Let's try to hurt the guy. That's where they're pounding to the ground. I understand that, because you got to go to the basket and you make him taste the wood. That's what we would call it, taste the wood. We didn't do that. You know, I played Jordan square up all the time. I just playing the way we played him, and you know, we were more successful than not. But I wish I would have been around in the '90s. It would have been fun.
Go ahead, D. Get D into the asshole.
Who you feel like Magic created the like the y'all together created the run and gun basketball thing, or do you feel like that was there before, and then it just got...
Magic created that. Yeah. That was, you know, he had to utilize all the pieces that he had, yeah. And Magic was an up-tempo player. You know what, DNA, some of the things I think about, and you said that everything was so fixed between Bird and Magic. Yeah. Let me ask you this question. Do you think things would have turned out had Larry Bird come to L.A. and Magic went to Boston?
Wow, that's crack.
Yeah, that is.
It's like so... Certain things are so stamped that I can't even envision.
Because it's like you said, it was supposed to be that way.
Yeah, it was supposed to be that way.
Man. So I couldn't even... Larry Bird in L.A., that doesn't even work. Can't even think about
Magic,
that.
Yeah. Magic with a big smile.
In Beantown.
Celtics jersey.
Yeah, nah.
Yeah, but those are some of the things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah.
Nah. But one thing I have to say, though, this is something that where the memories come in that I believe people... really don't get a chance to see us as fans and people behind the scenes. That camaraderie that you build with your brothers, all those hard battles, all those years, and you guys are back to back fighting for championships. Just those friendships and the camaraderie that you build. You know, does that still last to this day with your teammates? Are you still as tight?
Oh yeah,
as with everybody, right? Yeah.
You know what? A lot of us are a little fatter, a lot of us are a little balder, a little bit rounder. But you know what? When we get back together, like we had for the last game of this past season with the Lakers, it was Kareem's 77th birthday.
Shout out to the guy
and the Big Cap, and we had a birthday party, and everybody came. You know, Byron Scott, Kurt Rambis, Worthy, Bob McAdoo, just Norm Nixon. Everybody was there, and when I looked at those guys, I didn't see them as they were right in the present. I saw them with, and even myself, I looked in the mirror, I saw us with hair. I saw us like we were playing, you know.
You saw yourself when you guys were a teammate, right?
I see ourselves back in those days. So, and the camaraderie is still there. You know, we don't hang out as much anymore, but everybody's doing their own thing, but we still stay in contact. You'll text somebody every now and then or something like that, but you never lose it, because when I talk to them, I start talking to them like 45 years ago, you know, whatever it may be.
Wow. How does that feel, like, especially in your line of work as well, where it seems like it's every man for himself a lot of times in battle rap or in hip-hop, period? Like, tell me a little bit about the camaraderie that you build in your line of work as well. Do you, like, over time, it doesn't become about competition? You see these guys at every event. You kind of become cool with them because they're at every show, they're at every event. And even though guys might keep it professional to you if you haven't battled them yet, but do you feel like being at all those events and all those battles happening, do you feel like you kind of... not try to, but end up becoming friends with everybody?
Of course. I, like, it's even people that you're not close to, that you wouldn't say is close friends, it's a certain respect level. Like, yeah, I know what this guy does. I've seen him so many times. And, you know, I mean, you got your people when you on the road. I'm going to hang out with this person. We about to do this. And, yeah, and after a while, you just feel connected. Even to the people that you don't have numbers. If something happens, good or bad, you just feel like...
They got your back. Yeah.
Not even that they got your back. Like, right. It's like you're a family. So,
yeah. You
know,
well, I mean, got you.
Like, oh, yeah, if somebody gets hurt or somebody gets an accomplishment, it all feels like it's attached because we all, you know what I mean, doing the same thing in the same sport.
DNA, let me ask you this. How have you felt you've gotten better as you do your battles with different people every year? You get better. Is that something that you consciously work at? Do you try to pick up more words or just something that grows within you to become better?
Yeah, I feel like I feel like certain people are born with talent, mm-hmm. but you develop skill. Okay. So I feel like automatically when I started my career, I had talent, but then I developed into skill, which in my opinion, I feel is like more dangerous because it's like you don't want to, in basketball sense, you don't want to do a pump fake and, you know what I mean, step back and shoot a three. And then you just did that to do it. And now when the coach or the team asks you to do it again, you don't know how.
Yeah.
You want it to be intentional. So I feel like what makes me better is that now I could go out there and say, all right, well, if I write like this, this, and this, then I know this is going to land here. And, yeah, let me not freestyle at the beginning of the round, but let me wait until it's a dry spot or somebody says something to do it. Like, once it's all intentional, I feel it's that much more dangerous. So I practice that. I practice... you know what I mean? Of course, just writing my rhymes every day, staying sharp, freestyling, and also like life experiences. So when I started battle rapping and rapping in general, I was 11. And then when I started battling professionally, I was 17. I'm 31 now. So having a daughter, losing people, gaining people, life experiences, going all that, that just makes me better on what I'm able to talk about. Because what I would talk about when I'm 17 to 19, I won't talk about that at 31 because, you know what I mean, living life... I try to live my life by learning every day. So whatever information that I'm being gathered, I'm able to then transition that into my music or into a battle, which then I feel like my subject matter makes me better because it's not the same. Like,
you know, I know a couple of people in your field, and some people say, you know what, I battle better drunk or high. I mean, what do you think about that?
Mm-mm. No. Anytime I don't smoke at all.
Uh-huh.
Never did. And I never drink when I battle because I feel like I'm not as sharp.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm at my highest. Just as long as I got my time to prepare and I'm there, I just feel like I'm super on point without anything. And yeah. And I made it that way because I would never want to depend on something because then I would feel like I'm not that great if I need that to reach my highest potential. So
that's good.
Absolutely. So now, you know, you go to the part of your career now where you know you're retired. Now you're getting into the coaching part, and you know you coach the Big Three and. I love that league, by the way. I love that league. True. It's innovative. Cube
found something special found there, something man. Special. I kept wondering how he was going to be able to do that, and he pulled that off.
And look at you, man. Look clean, man. Look at you, man. Look at the beard, the nice beard.
Hey,
man. So you
well, you know who that guy there? Mm-hmm. You know how you guys got nicknamed? That's Silver Fox.
That's it.
Yeah. So
that's what you tell ladies with the toes.
Well, right? No. Yeah.
That's the Silver Fox, you hear me?
That's the Silver Fox.
Actually, a lady in the stands gave that to me. Coop, stop looking like a Silver Fox. So her feet were ugly. But anyway, coaching is something that I love in the Big Three. It's a unique concept that he got. And again, I think the league is only getting bigger and better because what happened is when Cube first started this, he was just trying to get a lot of named players.
Yeah.
And it became more physical than basketball. So now he's really opened it up. We got some international people coming over. To get in the league now, you got to be in better shape, a lot better shape. So it's, I mean, yeah. this year's team, I have Michael Beasley. I have Mario Hall. You know what? A walking bucket, but one of the weirdest guys that I've ever been around. Because no, I mean, he's just a different guy.
Yeah,
you know, that's like Michael Thompson was different when we played with the Lakers. But right. Beasley,
Clay's
I got
ball,
Mario. Right. Mario Chalmers. I have Julian Wright. I have Brandon Rush and Alex Gale. So I got a good squad this year, and going against some of the people like the Trippers, got ISO, Joe Johnson, Lisa Leslie's team. She got both Pargo brothers. So the league is definitely
good. Oh, she got Gennario?
And his brother.
He never missed it. Oh, hey.
That boy can he shoots four-pointers like they layups. So, you know, the league is really good. If you haven't come, you got to get out there, man. You got to get out there. This week, we just finished up in Chicago. We're in our second week. Next week, we'll be in Dallas. So we'll be in Dallas for 3 weeks, I believe, after that. And games are Saturday and Sunday. Three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday.
Where the games held at?
I think where the Mavericks play. I'm not sure. I just show up.
Where your team's at?
Yeah, I just show up.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to get you information.
Okay, please give me information. Okay. Now we got to pull up.
Yeah.
Got to pull up. I got to see this live.
Yeah.
We all got to pull up and see this.
But not that guy. He's not coaching anymore. That was a losing team, so I'm a different coach now.
Oh, so what's the nickname now?
Dark Gable.
Oh!
I'm gonna battle you, DNA. Dark Gable coming for you.
You had a round ready for him already, huh?
Almost. I gotta pick up some stuff, though. See, DNA is sharp. I gotta watch it. He got the gift of gab, so.
Listen, one thing I can say, you do too. We both Aries. I looked that up.
Fiery Aries, too. Yeah. Let me ask you a question, DNA, about your Knicks. Mm-hmm. Julius Randle, do you get rid of him or you bring him back next year?
I would say bring him back. I caught one Knick game. I caught like three last year. I'm bugging, but I caught one courtside, and that's when they faced the Nuggets. And I don't know what was going on with the coach. I still don't get why they sat Kemba. That game, Kemba Walker was on the bench. I don't know why
Kemba. Do you like Kemba?
Yeah, I felt like why put Kemba on a bench when that's an extra 17 points, 17 to 20 points you get on there. But when I was there just seeing Julius Randle play, I was amazed seeing him go off. I think he had like 25 that game. So for me, I just feel like the coaching got to get better. They need better players on the team, but I wouldn't get rid of him.
See, let me ask you a question, okay? You're an NBA fan, right?
I'm a Spurs fan, yeah.
And the question I'm going to bring to you is what Pop did, this load management. What do you think of that? Resting players because they tired.
I think that's a bunch of bullshit, honestly.
I call big bullshit.
I think it's a way for people to rest or whatever, and people to get days off. But I think that it's just a loophole to try to. Look, I'm gonna tell you something. I'm gonna be honest with you. I was a Spurs fan that wanted us to play more exciting. Like, I'm like a fan of your guys' big game at heart. But I loved a friend of mine, a family who was friends with Tim, so I loved, I stuck with the Spurs. Even though watching us play basketball is like watching paint dry. But at the same time, you know, I understood the winning, like he said, the fundamental parts of basketball. I think the load management was a way to rest players. And I think you know this, but certain incentives or certain things in people's contracts, certain things that, you know, if we sit him for 80 games and he just get 80 games, he can get this amount of money in his contract. It's deeper than just them being tired. I think it's more behind.
I don't like it. Because I just feel like it became a crutch. Like now you got guys not playing the best basketball because they know, all right, this money's guaranteed and now I got this crutch and this excuse when I'm just just for example, like, it's no way the Celtics are up 3-0 and Ben Simmons is not entering the game. Like just based on even injuries. Like, now you'll have a small injury and it's blown out of proportion where somebody, we talking about Michael Jordan, we found out years later it wasn't the flu, but food poisoning. He just said Isaiah scored 27 with a sprained ankle. And now, you know what I mean, I'm not going to knock your pain because I don't know, but, you know, back pain is not severe as, I mean, as other injuries, and you're not on the floor with your team when they're facing elimination. It's like, I feel like the league just got so soft where now it's about money. And you know what I mean? Being African-American, I want all my brothers to make as much money as they can, but I always feel like the business in any sport taints the art.
Yeah.
Because then the goal is more so about, I want the money. How much money can I get? And in the process of that, you're downgrading what you actually fell in love with, which is your talent in the art, even in music. Like, now it's more about how, like me, certain times I'll take battles where I may not get as much money as I can somewhere else because I'm just in that mode of, yo, I want to battle. I want to perfect my craft. I want to make it better. And I feel like that's the balance that everybody that has a talent has to understand. You have to, sometimes you have to say, right, because people just make things black and white. To me, it's a gray area. Certain times I'm battling, yes, because I want this check. I know this league has this amount of money. I put in this much work. I want it. And then sometimes I know, all right, this battle I'm doing for myself. I'm going to try some new shit out. Let me just do this for me. I feel like a lot of times people don't know how to do that balance and then they get driven on one. Like, I don't want everybody driven off the art because then you'll be homeless. But then at the same time, you can't just be driven just for the money because you're going to lose your passion of what you actually, you know, inspired and dreamed to
and
do.
That's why I commend both you guys on what you guys do. Because you guys have both been at the highest level for so long on what both of you guys do. It's easy for you to fall off and not care about your memory. I'm going to go to this battle and I can freestyle two rounds of this. And maybe you did it for fun sometimes. But you was like, nah, I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to be a professional at what I do. You being a champion. You getting up each and every day athletically, having to put your body and mind on the line. Him going on stage and seeing thousands of people. And he doesn't have any teammates. It's just him. He might have a two-on-two partner, but most of the time it's just him.
Yeah.
And he has to make 3,000 people agree with what he's saying. And that takes a whole nother mindset to be able to do that. So that's why I commend both of you guys for your longevity. Now, this is my one question about this. Do you feel that in your respective sport, and your respective sport, and just in the world period, do you feel that longevity is respected now? Because it seems like everyone's always trying to find a way to knock someone for what they're doing, nitpick at people's careers. You know, how do you feel about longevity? Do you feel like it's respected as much as it should be?
I think in the NBA, it's respected because I think if a player that can last that long, Jordan, and in this case, we have LeBron going 20 years, Kareem 20, the late, great Kobe Bryant 20, people respect that, especially if you stay at a certain height in your longevity. I think if you get there and all of a sudden you fall off real bad, I think as a player that you have to understand that, okay, I'm not good at my craft anymore. Let me step aside because there's some young kids coming up. But I do believe people, especially in the NBA, I can't speak for football, baseball, but in the NBA, I think people do respect the longevity, especially if you're a great player and you continue to be great just as long as you don't fall off and look too bad.
What about you, Legend?
I feel like longevity is respected in battle rap as long as you, the artist, understand what longevity is. Like for me, I know the process is when I first came in, they love me, then they hate me, and I know then they'll love me again. Like a lot of people fall off, not because they're not skillful no more, because they don't understand what it is. And the first time somebody seen Magic do this, they were amazed. The first time they seen Jordan do that, and then it came to a point, what else can they do? And the reason what made them great is because they had something else to do. So I feel like in battle rap, you know, when they first see you freestyle and do it, that's wow, wow, wow. And then it's like, all right, but what else can he do now? And you know, for rap, when people that are not in the culture, they just think it's one thing, a rapper. But, you know, in my first years of battle rap, it was just like punchlines. Then when I got later on, it's like performance. Now I'm at a stage where it's like breaking somebody down and combining those schemes and punchlines that still fit with the person. So it's all different ways of, you know what I mean, looking at it to where if you're able to reinvent yourself, then I feel like longevity is respected in battle rap.
Let me ask you this, Dad. Will you know when to quit?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When will that be? Because for me, let me just explain. For me, I always enjoyed practice being the type of player I was. For me, practice was very important. Kareem wasn't a big practice guy. And Pat Riley was like, okay, all I needed, I need you on game day. I don't need you in practice. Right, but for me, practice was important. And I remember when I left the Lakers in 90, I went overseas for money. And I played in Italy, and we played 32 games. On the 31st game, we had a practice before the game. I went to practice. I said, you know what? I don't want this anymore. And I knew then that I was going to quit. So I finished up practice, played that game, and I came on home. And I didn't miss basketball, but some players don't know when to say when. In your line of field, will you know when to say when?
I feel like, in terms of a battle rapper, in terms of music, I think I'll do music for as long as I'm here on earth because it's something that is, you know what I mean, for me. So I may not put out albums no more, but if I want to do a song here, do this here, land this on a movie, land this on a show, then I'll do that. But in terms of battle rap, getting up, performing, writing rhymes for people and doing that, I feel like it just hit me one day. Because like I said, two things, right? When I know I can't create at a fast pace because like, also too, like I said, sometimes for people not wanting to do something no more doesn't mean they don't have the ability, but it's just not like where they're used to doing it. So when I ever sign up for a battle and I can't think of the material, or it comes to me the way I want it to come to me in that fast pace, or it's not good, because I'm my own worst critic. So a lot of things too, why, like you said, what a lot of people don't know when to quit, because they're not self-aware.
Yeah.
I mean, they're believing in the hype. Like me, I'm not that type of person. So the moment I'm creating and I know it's not there, I won't make myself look bad. I don't want someone else to tell me, yo, you should give this up. I'm going to know. And then have them be like, yo, wow, you really think so? I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm good.
So if you suck it up and that girl with the pretty lips comes, she says, DNA, it's a wrap, man.
Yeah, so we got this thing at that point, like TZ knows it's good night. Good night means good night. So as soon as that happens, I'm gonna tell her good night.
If that woman with pretty feet come up to me and she says it's a rap, I'm saying, let's go to your room. We go ahead and do what we're gonna do.
Mike a freak, y'all.
Yeah. Mike is different.
Listen. What's that old commercial? Give it to Mike. He eats anything.
Lord. I wasn't gonna say this.
See, y'all don't remember that commercial, do you?
Let's just say this. I'm not gonna get into it. We have to get fully into it. But I think when it came to them parties and them stories you hear about the Lakers, you was the first one in the door.
Well, that's easy.
Is Winning Time accurate?
Winning Time is not accurate. I have not watched it.
Is that accurate?
But they told us that's only by 2 or 3%. Because I was going, yeah, we're going to throw that out there.
Okay.
I haven't watched
it. Okay, yeah,
but
yeah.
But the Lakers, DNA, you could have put it out there.
Okay, cool.
But it's not. I have not watched it. Seriously. Okay. I have my friends, they'll say, hey, Coop, did this happen? This happened. The only thing that they have with me, that my car broke down on the way to training camp.
Yeah.
And they had my wife underneath the car fixing the car. That didn't happen. My car broke down, but we waited for AAA. So that's the lure of that. Exactly. Yeah. That's why.
But you know what they do? That's how all shows are sneaky. They put loosely based.
Yeah.
So that way they get to throw in all the other things that make people go.
DNA, this is the thing. The guy was supposed to. Guy Jeff Pearlman wrote a book called Showtime. That's a big, thick book if you get a chance to read it, okay? The guy is supposed to be tailoring the movie after that book. But because he deviated so much and depicted people so wrong, that's why they did it, changed it from Showtime to Winning Time. That's why they call it Winning Time. But the Lakers are coming out with their documentary that's going to blow that out the water. And it's going to be a true thing.
That shit ain't real.
Yeah. And Jerry West, the way they depicted him was just, that was not Jerry West. Cursing all the time, drinking, women chasing. Jerry West was not like that. One of probably the most professional guys I've ever been around. Dr. Buss, they had him with a shirt all the way down to his navel open. Dr. Buss wasn't that way, man. He wasn't that way. So, again, that's why I'm not watching it.
The accuracy, is it true that Jack McKinley was the coach, and then he had that bicycle accident? Yeah,
that's true, because he was riding a bike, and he fell over a pebble or something like that and almost killed himself, man. And that's true. That kind of stuff true. But when they get into players and things like that.
They weren't around for that. Yeah, they weren't around for
that. They had Jerry Buss looking like Hugh Hefner.
Dr. Buss enjoyed women. He owned a team, man. Yeah. That was his world.
On that part, like, because I did my, of course, just watching basketball, I did my research. Mm-hmm. But on that part, just to see everything that I feel like most of those, because, like, having almost three different coaches. Jerry West quit before the season started, then Jack McKinley, then Westhead. They said Jerry Buss' mom passed away during that same year. Just all those things. And I don't know about the business, but the way the show made it seem is like he was in over his head, and then
Never. Dr. Buss knew what he was doing the whole time. He's the one that implemented DirecTV with on TV. He got that. He started the Laker girls, the cheerleaders and stuff.
Yeah, they showed that.
Dr. Buss was really innovative in person, man.
So for me, it's like just getting a team and all those things happening, and then, you know, that being Magic's first year, you guys just starting this whole new offense and winning the championship. That's what made me feel like in itself it was a movie already, because it's just like, how does all this happen in 1 year and it goes right?
Exactly.
So wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So since we're having fun, I got to ask you this. I have to ask you this. The game's over. You guys win. Go to the club that's in the...
What city we in?
You in L.A. You in L.A. You all the broads out.
Well, I didn't go out in L.A. I was married.
Oh, he was married?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So, watch out, DNA. Come on, listen to it.
The party. So who's the first in the party? Who's the first in the?
I don't know. I wasn't out there. If it's in LA.
Oh, okay. So New York.
New York.
MSG. Who? The game over. You guys beat the Knicks. You beat their ass. Sorry. And you go into the who at the party? Who first at the party?
Well, we would all go out. I mean, we'd all go out and have a good time.
So the whole locker room going together.
Provided we didn't have a game the next night. So I mean, but the only ones that went out, myself, Magic, James Worthy would go out every now and then. Byron Scott would go out every now and then. Norm Nixon would go out. Kareem wasn't a person that went out a lot with us. He would do, but most of the time we would go to a movie. Yeah,
he was OG by that.
So whatever he was doing, he was.
Quiet about it.
Yeah.
Teaching them yoga and all that. I see.
Stand on your head.
Yeah, man. Okay.
No, I mean, you know, certain guys went out to certain cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't like some big freak show because we understood our profession. We knew that we had to come back. We were going to play the next day, and that wasn't allowed again. If you were a lot of the rookies, I won't name names, but a lot of the rookies that weren't playing a lot, would go out and indulge in whatever they wanted to.
A lot of the rookies. Okay, I got you. I see where you're going. I got you. So, you know, man, one last thing before we close, man, on this wonderful 54th episode of the podcast, man. You know, I'd like to show everybody some love, man, and to close this out, you know, usually we have the tags and everything like that, man. You know what, my brother? You got anything you want to freestyle a little bit on the way out of the door, man? Anything you got to say?
I'll give you another winning line.
Yeah, right? Come on, baby. Yeah, man, you want that?
Well, you want to go to the mic over there, baby? That's all we got. Give me your mic. Give me my mic, man. Go ahead, brother. Yeah. Close the show out, man. What's up, man?
So another thing I told him, this is from my battle that I just had that I won. I said, ain't no need for more discussion. I pop one and it's done. Hear the coroner coming. His girl trying to save the Lord from the Lord up above him. That's till something sick, Ada. I'm in Florida bugging. Z the Dropout. Get money, drink water.
Your social media. Tell them where to follow you, man.
At Z the Dropout everywhere. Z's is walking.
Hey, I like him, but you fine talent, bro. Listen, man. We thank you guys for tuning in to this 54th episode of the Swerve City Podcast, man. This is a lot of fun. I'm glad to have these two brothers here with me. It's amazing to learn about both of their careers. And these podcasts go by fast, man, because you be in the zone.
Yeah.
And they see me like, damn, man, I want to be, man, you just sit up in the flow because there's so much more to talk about, man. And we're just hanging out. And, man, I appreciate both of you guys, man, for coming. You know, you legend for pulling up Mike and telling your stories. And always admire your career and what you're doing. Keep winning, win that championship in the Big Three. Send me that information because I'm going to pull up.
If I do that, I will have won everything the NBA stands for. An NBA championship, a coach as an NBA, WNBA player, WNBA coach player, right? And in the G League, Albuquerque Thunderbirds, the NBA G League.
Yes.
Or D League at that time. Now it's the G League.
Right.
It's the last one. If I can get this with NBA players.
So you guys, so you don't know directly, but you guys play with them. I was just in Arlington. So you guys play with the Mavericks play?
Yeah, where the Mavericks play. Yeah.
I was right there. Oh, man, I'm definitely pulling up. I'm getting the same hotel I was at, too. That was good. Okay, cool.
But, TZ, I'm going to get you the information, okay?
Please give me information. I'm definitely pulling up. I have to see that live.
Yep.
Definitely. Okay, cool. So, you know, my brother, DNA, the rap legend, battle rap legend, we appreciate everything that you tell. Plug your podcast. Plug everything you have going on, too, man. Plug that in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Breakfast with the Champ on Caffeine, DNA GMDW. Instagram, The Real DNA GTFOH, Twitter, DNA _ GTFOH, and YouTube/ The DNA Files.
Man, look at that, man.
You know what, TZ? I got to get more into that because I don't have all that, but I do have one thing I want to plug. My podcast, Showtime with Coop, Insightful BS with my Laker teammates and NBA legends. That's it. I don't know how to do Instagram and all that other stuff.
Oh, okay. So you got a podcast as well, real quick. So you have legends on your podcast?
Oh, yeah. I got, you should look at it.
I saw it on your Instagram.
Kareem Worthy. Dr. J is on. I went deep.
Oh, Dr. J is on there. Right. So you got to talk about the dunk.
Huh? Oh, yeah, we talk about the dunk.
You told him he was going to beat him one-on-one next time?
Well, you got to watch the podcast. It's fun.
I like that. I like that advertisement, man. Yeah. I like that advertisement, man. We, everybody here is networking.
lot of black men here getting money, podcasting, making noise. We salute you guys. Thank you guys to the team. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to Cy. Thank you to X. Thank you guys for all you do for this podcast. We love you. You guys for all the work, man. Be confident in everything you do. Wash your ass. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.